You're listening to WWBC Coco, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Coco, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, and 100.7 FM.
Hello, space and treasure coast. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida. We are heard on AM 1510, WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and everywhere on God's magnificent, glorious planet.
That's right. On 15th, it really is 1510wwbc.com. Hit that listen live button and get us on any one of your streaming devices that you have. Or if you'd like to get the archives of our shows, you can certainly get them from that same page, 1510wwbc.com, or any one of our social media channels, which on Facebook, Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. I think Sita's got a TikTok channel now, Instagram. She's like, listen live all over the World Wide Web. So it's awesome. And all of our shows, you can download them and have them as part of your marketing or any of the channels that you'd like to put them on as well. They're shareable and a lot of fun.
We have a packed studio today, and for our listeners who are just tuning into Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, we sit here on Mondays, Ellen O'Neill, Ali, and myself, and Danny, who runs our board, and we talk to people right here in Brevard County, Florida. We have a conversation with people, whether it's about our state, whether it's about our nation, whether it's about a nonprofit, running for office. Some people like to talk about writing a book. Some people like to talk about the book they've written. Some people like to just come here and sit and visit with us and just listen and learn. We've had so many people that came on our show that we've connected them to each other, like we did with Green Gables.
Right.
And we had a film made. We had people singing songs here, artists, whatever it is. It's Viewpoint with Sita and Friends give everyone a platform to come and talk. And today's no different. On our show today, we've got my good friend, LaKrista Jones, who I sat with at an event. We met, and I realized that she is with one of the agencies in town that I really wanted to get on the show a second time. They were here when we first started, Ellen, years ago, Housing for Homeless. And Mr. Phil Scarpelli is here. He is the President and Chief Executive Officer. Welcome to the show, Mr. Phil, and thank you for being on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Oh, my pleasure to be here.
Brevard Family Partnership.
Yeah, not Housing for
Homeless. That's Did I say that?
Yes, that's okay.
I'm still in party mode.
I've been calling my drummer the wrong name for 2 years.
Two parties.
No worries.
Two parties, and it's all Miriam's fault.
That's right.
Housing for Homeless, Dr. Miriam Moy is here, and Rob Cramp is here, and they're going to talk the second segment. Thank you for that. You caught me there, Ms. Ellen.
My pleasure. You know, so edit later.
Yeah. So, Mr. Phil Scarpelli, what an easy name to say. I don't have to worry
Very
about
it. Very melodic, isn't it?
It really is.
Yeah, it just
like
rolls
it.
Out.
Yeah. Thanks to your parents for that.
That's
one.
Right.
So we all talk about, you know, what we can do on here in Brevard and around our nation, and even some of us around the world. Like, I'm involved in a lot of peace groups around the world to try to bring peace on this planet. And we ask ourselves on a daily basis, how can I use my experience, my life experience, my education, the people that came before us, whatever I've learned from people, to give back to Brevard or give back to the United States or just give back to whatever cause or nonprofit we see fit. And Brevard Family Partnership is one of those that helps and teaches people how to adopt a child, how to foster a child, how to love a child, how to use your resources to help someone. And also, that in turn helps us to have great citizens, good people here in Brevard. And we're going to let Phil Scarpelli, the president and CEO of Brevard Family Partnership, introduce himself to our audience and tell us a little bit about Brevard Family Partnership.
Thank you, Sita. You know, I was just about to say right after your kind introduction, that's a wrap. I mean, you said it so wonderfully. You know, you think about community. That's what Brevard Family Partnership is all about. It's about building community. And like you said even earlier, you know how you never meet anybody who's a stranger.
That's right.
And I feel with the moment today with this group that we are like a family, a community of family that is here for those in need, right? I mean, we're really blessed to be celebrating today as community members and sharing our own plight and our own stories. But in fact, you know, there are children who don't know what tomorrow will bring. And our organization, nearly 20 years old, has been dedicating its mission and its vision to helping children who have experienced childhood experiences that have been quite adverse and unfortunate. And we don't do what we do without the community and without partnerships. And today we come together, my colleagues and I, and we also are here on behalf of 300 other dedicated folks who each and every day are reaching out to families who are in crisis or on the verge of crisis. And for those children who we hope to bring an opportunity for a better tomorrow, a tomorrow that's more promising than what they've, you know, experienced thus far.
Right. And being a foster parent or adopting a child is one of the most rewarding experiences that a person can have, correct? And you've had a lot of people here in Brevard that's come forward. But for the ones who are tuning into Viewpoint with Seed and Friends and listening to our show today, how does one become a foster parent? Or how does one adopt?
Well, let me preempt that with something, because you bring in a good point about who are these people, right? And we have approximately 125 licensed foster homes, right? And I speak, you know, in this venue, not only to them, but to those out there who may have thought, could I do that? You know, could I take a child who I'm not familiar with, a child with experiences that I might not know how to deal with, and bring them into my home? And we at Brevard Family Partnership will echo the message of response. Basically, it doesn't take anything special.
Yeah, a lot of people think you have to have a lot of qualifications.
Absolutely.
Yes.
I mean, after all, we're going to take a child who's come from usually trauma and abuse and neglect and into a home where we want to make sure that that experience is in fact part of a journey of healing. So we want to make sure the families are intact themselves, prepared themselves, and willing and able to integrate that which we impart with them. A lot of training and a lot of support. Because it's going to be a journey unlike anything they probably have experienced. But at the same time, it's a journey of rewards that are so intrinsic in nature that people don't often reflect until much time has passed and realize, oh my God, I've had an opportunity to change this child's outlook.
Right. And oftentimes you'll hear people say, well, do you have to be married or single? What age do you have to be? Tell our listeners on Viewpoint with Seed and Friends some of the qualifications that a person has to have in order to even consider adopting a child or being a foster parent.
Yeah. I've been in this industry for over 30 years. And I can honestly tell you, for all this time that we've been looking for families and individuals, and I emphasize that, to open their hearts and open their homes to children. You know, the fundamental criteria is there are certain basics with regards to the environment in which the child will be brought into, the background of the individuals who will be caring for them. But quite honestly, what's it going to take? An open-minded person. And we are open-minded as an organization when we look at a community of people who are saying, how can I help them? Where might that fit for me? If you're willing to take in a child who's going to need attention, nurturance, and language that tells them that they're in a psychologically safe place to be who they are, then what are we talking about as far as criteria? Criteria. It's a very humane thing, right? So there are logistical things about the home and the environment, the background, all that stuff. We work with them and through that, and the process is usually you know, done within several weeks, but what takes time is the building of relationships with these kids and making sure that they understand that we're here to protect them.
Right. And also the person who wants to adopt parents or somebody in the community, there is training provided as well.
Yes.
Correct?
Yes.
And how long is the training?
So training is about 6 weeks, but it's a curriculum. So it's a very standardized approach at looking all of the issues that we've known in the industry for decades and have compiled it in a way that integrates understanding children, understanding from where they came and where we hope to take them on this journey. And it helps them working with kids with special needs and kids that are looking at trust issues. That's very, very important that we build that. And then last but not least, understanding trauma. Understanding trauma is a very unique skill set. Years past, it used to be trauma-informed. Today, it's about trauma responsiveness. And what is uniquely elevated and evolved is how do you engage a child of trauma from the moment you approach them, before words?
Yeah, I think that would, oftentimes, it's not how you say something, is not what you say, is how you say
Correct.
It, and it's also the approach.
Yes.
That's what everyone does.
Yeah.
From the person you work with to your next door neighbor, somebody you encounter in the store. It's all our approach in life, right? And I think with trauma, you have to have that extra step.
Yeah.
It's a question. Now, at Brevard Family Partnership, you also work very closely with reunification with the biological families as well. So tell our listening audience a little bit about a child that comes into the foster care program. How does the court system, or how does Brevard Family Partnership assist with the reunification for the families?
That's a great question. It's a very complex answer in the sense that there's many pieces to the puzzle, but if I can just simplify it to some degree, in which the courts determine the placement of the child, that the child needs to be placed. But at the same time, the court's also determining what is it that mom and dad need to bring themselves together to be able to provide the necessities of life for this child, to keep them safe and all of their basic needs being met. So what we do is that when upon recruitment, we do all the screening, we do a lot of the training, and through that training we talk about how do you care for kids with special needs. The curriculum in and of itself is only curricula, right? It's the people behind the curriculum that talks about the highs and the lows. And what is beautiful about today in the pursuit of reunification, which is the overwhelming goal for these children who are coming into care, 80%+ of all children are going back to mom and dad because that's probably where they belong, right? But there are percentages of families that won't get there together, their act together. And the things that plague a lot of moms and dads are really domestic violence, substance abuse, and mental illness, right? Those are very complex issues that sometimes takes many, many years of healing. But what we remember, what we want to remember, is that foster care is an interim state. It's an interim state. So what do you do in an interim state? You look at helping the child towards normalcy, helping the child towards remediation of issues that they have had since being with those
parents. Right, like there's a light at the end of the tunnel,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes.
And then when there's a will, there's a way.
Yeah.
And I think that's what you guys offer to the biological parents as well. The other thing is, too, that in order to a foster child or adopt a child, you have to be financially stable, at least, and you have to be physically able as well. A lot of people want to, but they don't. I mean, we see a lot of grandparents adopting children, too, and that seems to be like we had a show about that. We had a grandparents who are parenting children now. Do you see a lot of that here in
Florida? Oh, yes. Florida is one of the largest states where grandparents are raising their kin. And it's been a wonderful thing. We work with private agencies that actually help those families along and help, oftentimes the outcome being that grandmas and grandpas are adopting their own kinship. And we support them and we help them and they're our partners. But getting back to the reunification question, Cedar, which is very, very important, is
yes.
Today, I'm so proud on behalf of our organization, our many staff that work with these families. Foster parents are saying one of the most exciting things that are happening is the relationship that they're building with moms and dads while they take their children in and mom and dad get help. Many of them are making lifelong relationships out of this.
Yes.
And they're saying, I never thought it would be like this. And are realizing that when a child sees the family of present, which we call foster families, and the family that they were born to working together, that now becomes a community of people were there to support them. That's really very unique.
Yeah, I think, and I think in the old days, years past, That was never such a close-knit thing. People didn't do that as much. But today, of course, with social media and all that, you could send pictures and things. But I actually just had a friend of mine whose children were placed in the Brevard foster program. And thankfully, she was able to get her children back through the court system and through the fostering system here in Brevard. And she was extremely happy with the way everything played out. She got her kids back, and she, as you say, she did remain good friends with the foster mom. I actually sat next to the foster mom, and she watched the little boy while my friend got married, which I thought was so sweet, because I thought maybe there's an aunt or cousin or something. She says, no, I was his foster mom.
I've had two experiences. Yeah. When I was a child, my next-door neighbor had foster kids all the time. So I probably met 15 or 20 new kids every single year, because sometimes she had them for a week, sometimes she had them for a few months. And now I have a friend now that is older. She's probably late 60s, somewhere in that. And all these children come around all the time, and she's like, this is my daughter. I'm like, your daughter? I thought you only had one daughter. No, I have 14 daughters, because all of them wound up, you know, again, as adults, wound up reconnecting with, it was Alana.
Yes.
Reconnecting with her. And now her daughter, who was a single, you know, a single child, now has all these siblings,
right,
you know, so to speak, because now they've all stayed connected. So always great to hear the end stories, and hopefully people can become part of hearing some of those stories, because that's what makes, emotion makes people take action.
That's, you know, players, yes.
And when you see families grow up like that, and you see the connection and the just the ability to be able to put a child like that into a community or an environment of other families. It's just a wonderful, wonderful.
If I may add, you know, this is a beautiful segue into the family component that brings the children in. One of the other things that I have been a keen observer is the bio children in the homes of foster families that are observing and engaging foster kids coming into the home. Many a parent would say to us, I don't know if I can do this because I don't know the impact on my own children. I don't want them, if anything, to feel neglected or second to the contrary. What I have seen with bio children is that they embrace that nurturing role. They do see children, but for the grace of God, could be them. And yet they nurture these other foster kids in their home in a way that emulates the behavior of the parent.
And the most inclusive people you'll ever meet,
yes,
in your life.
Yes, right. Yes.
If you were a child raised with foster children, you are the most inclusive person.
Well,
ever.
You know, that's the we always say it takes a village, right? Mm-hmm. It really does take,
yes,
a village. And I think oftentimes, you know, when we pay taxes, we say, well, you know, some people complain about paying taxes, and then there's others that say, well, look at what it's doing with our social programs. Mm-hmm. It helps with healthcare, and it helps with housing, and it helps with, you know, trying to help people who need a home, make a down payment on a home, whatever it is, social programs help. But at the same time, when you think about the adoption process and you think about fostering a child, once those children get into the system, we are here as citizens through our tax dollars and through empathy and compassion to be that part of that village. We're all part of the village, whether we know it or not.
Yeah,
we're helping all the children. So tell our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, now the criteria to adopt a child. We've spoken about foster children and the empathy and compassion that we have in the home. What about those who want to, after they've fostered the children, then are saying, well, look, it, now I'd like to adopt this child and make it a permanent thing and give this child a sense of stability and self-worth and belong to my family?
That's a great question, which has a multiple angle of issues to be addressed. One is that when we recruit families, we really look for those whose goals, personal, familial, and otherwise, are specific to want to foster kids. And then there are those who simply want to adopt kids. But that's not to say we would ever deny the fact that many a foster parent have fallen in love with these children to the point at which, once mom and dad's rights have been terminated, they're like, no, we're here. We're here for the long haul, and we want to raise this child to adulthood, you know. But the criteria is basically the same and very similar as far as background screening and the home studies that we do to determine all of the factors in and around the environment, the people, and the in and outs of coming with that home. So the criteria is very, very similar. And, you know, here's another thing that was a discussion we had earlier. You know, we're very inclusive oriented in our pursuit of families. You know, it's not how one lives per se, or how they identify, or from where their background is from, or their religion. The bottom line is, are you willing to accept and love and care for a child unconditionally?
That's universal. It comes from the heart. It comes from the heart.
Yes.
You have to want it. Yes. And, you know, a lot of times when people look at adopting or fostering a child, they say, "Ay, the paperwork." They think it's so much. How can you tell our listeners or someone who's thinking about it that don't be afraid? The first step is open the application.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And do you have appointments where someone could come in to provide family partnership and speak with someone to guide them through the process?
Absolutely. We have licensing specialists that sit and walk with them every step of the way. It's not a process that's easy for anyone. And so, but it's necessary, right? It is one of those necessary things that one would understand when they go through the exercise, why it's necessary and what our obligation is. And so we have staff that build very strong relationships and are there for them for the duration of the time in which they remain a licensed foster home. So that issue on paperwork is not a major issue. It's a very big responsibility, but someone works with them side by side.
And I think this is a time on our show when we ask for your website and how somebody can get in contact with Brevard Family Partnership.
Oh, they must go to our website, www.brevardfp.org. We have a lot of information about what you can do, what you would need to know, and the points of contact.
Right. And do you partner with any of the businesses in town with Brevard Family Partnership?
We partner with business and the faith community alike. I mean, there are a lot of players that are there with us and for us, whether it is getting the word out, getting involved in events that celebrate the children, events that celebrate the foster families, and sometimes even the events that celebrate the benchmarks by which we accomplish because of the community and the relationships. You know, today, unlike 10, 20 years ago, more children are being reunified with their biological families at a much faster rate than decades ago. More children are being adopted to forever loving family than decades ago. More kids right here in our county are graduating high school at a higher rate than many, many decades ago. And we believe that is because not just what Brevard Family Partnership is doing, it's what we do with the community and the schools and the churches.
Yeah, and Brevard County, we have so many nonprofits, but we also have a lot of people in our town who actually care about where we live. I mean, we see it all the time in all the events. People support each other all the time. And I think that's great. That's something wonderful about where we live. So tell our listeners a little bit about what we call the forever families.
Well,
how many forever families? Do you have numbers? Like how many people that you could count and say we brought this many people together as forever families?
Well, I tell you what. This is going on across the state.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be November. It's National Adoption Month, right? And I have to say very proudly that in Brevard County, we probably do about 150 adoptions a year in one county. And so over the past, 5 years, 760 children have been landed with and blessed with forever families. 760 in just the last 5 years.
And how many new homes do you need?
Well, we could really use, right now, our campaign is about 65 licensed homes. And that would be wonderful if we can do that coming into the new year. And what that allows us, and this is what's important for the community to know, is the opportunity's there, the children are there. We need choice of placement. Because we want to make sure the match of a child to a family is conducive to what the family's looking for, what they're comfortable with, and then also to match the background of the child. And so when you find this kind of match efforts made,
it's like, yes!
Yes, yeah, okay. Right. I love that.
So, what is so tell us a little bit about the UFO campaign.
So that is our new brand this coming year, and we're looking for this unique experience because it really is the unique foster care experience, right? So it's about understanding an opportunity to change your life and your perspective and maybe purpose about what are you in fact giving back to the community and what are you doing to impact a life or lives. Many of our foster families have many children, sometimes sibling groups. And it takes, like we have been saying all morning or afternoon here, a village to help a family, a lot of our families who have brought in multiple kids really get a spotlight, as I've observed, from the community, and people are reaching out and saying, you know, how can we help them, and understanding what they're actually juggling. And so
it's, talk about juggling. What I hear a lot from single parents or even families with two income is the daycare situation. It, I mean, I know, thank God, my daughter can afford it, but she pays $450 a week for my grandson in daycare that she writes a check for. And a lot of people that here in Brevard, daycare seems to be a real issue. Everybody's shaking their head with that.
Yes.
Do you find that when
people
come to
Yes, it's funny you say that, because we have a dedicated board member who is so dedicated to this mission that he's become embraced and engulfed in understanding that the plight of the need for programming for children, particularly in early years, is necessary, that he's replicating a model program that he has for kids in the community. And we need more. We do need more.
And you always find that the daycare workers and the healthcare workers are paid the least amount than so many people. That's but that's for another show. So we have a few minutes left, and I wanted you to talk a little bit about the foster parent resources. When is the next training
session?
So,
boy, your timing is impeccable. So training for prospective foster parents will start in January 9th. It's two weeks for 4 weeks from 6 to 9 p.m. So we try to accommodate evening hours for folks. And we do it at our location, and we also integrate virtual experiences with us. Foster parent resources, trainings, and case management is all a part of an internal support of what we're trying to maintain and elevate, so that families have resources at their fingertips. Think about it. Many of our families actually have regular daytime jobs, and then they come home to kids and stuff like that, and our kids are oftentimes in school and so forth. But juggling all that and having resources, just like any one of us, when you can go online or you can read material and do self-study engagement in our support group meetings and stuff like that, is a great way to have a very eclectic approach of learning and experiencing this foster journey. And
right. So we're there. Your website is great. Whoever designed that website, give them an A++++ from us.
Okay.
We got so much information off of there. And also, now, most of the nonprofits in town or people who are doing just wonderful things, they have events. Any events coming up or anything that our listeners should know about if they wanted to support? I know you need volunteers. If anybody has some money and they want to donate, you'd gladly take that to help the kids and the parents. What else can we do?
Well, right now, of course, we're excited about our National Adoption Day event that we have at Space Coast Stadium. And we're going to be having a large community event engaging all of our stakeholders to the adoption of children.
And
but also,
what's the date for that?
That is, yeah.
That's okay?
Yeah.
Well, whenever, well, don't worry about that. We will find you, and you'll find us when the time is right.
Brevard, yes. FP.
That's okay. We'll figure it out. But you know, the other thing is too, like, if you could just tell our listeners, what is the immediate need right now?
So the immediate need. Okay, so you guys know that we need foster families. We need to license 65 foster homes within the next few months, because that will be a godsend to helping us work with our kids, number one. We have a tournament coming up, a golf tournament, an annual tournament that we engage the community.
Which I did send to my son-in-law, Scotty.
Yes.
My friend, LaCrista, I sent it to him, and I said, you guys need golfers.
It's right here in Rockledge on the 3rd of November. Be there or be square, and if you'd like to swing the club, come and join us. It's also a beautiful networking experience and opportunity to learn more about us and us about the community. It was very successful in previous years, and we invite them to come along.
You know, when I think about adopting children or fostering children, I think about the Caribbean, where I'm from. In Trinidad and Tobago, if someone for some reason loses a parent or both parents and they have nowhere to go, the actual village does take care of those children. You, before you know it, you'll find a kid living with somebody. But I love that here in America, they do check the background, the person. Because, you know, in those small countries, they don't check everything, and you're putting a child. But my point is that the family come together, the extended village. And before you know it, the kid has a uniform, and he's got a book bag, and he's going to school. And somehow, by the grace of God, the kids grow up. But it is so wonderful to have an agency that checks everything, and there's a check and balance with Brevard Family Partnership. You have a board of directors, you have people watching, and it's good for us to know this.
Yeah. And we're very diligent, right? I mean, they're our children. We embrace them, and we want to make sure that the people who step up to the cause, we've cleared that all around, and then we embrace them and teach them and work with them and support them. It's very important.
But, you know, this sort of thing comes not just from people who want to adopt children, but I think it's society. We have to become a nation of people that have empathy and care about each other and do want love and unity in our community and in our world and in the United States, because this is how you train people to love and to give back. Mm-hmm. It starts in our homes. The foundation for everything starts at home, right? Because you can't want to be a foster parent or adopt a child if you don't care about humanity.
Yeah, well said, my friend.
And I think a lot of that is what we're seeing play out right here in Brevard County, Florida, with Brevard Family Partnership.
Thank you. You know, it's interesting. There's a subpopulation of support, and that is within the fostering community. They are a wonderful support system in and of themselves. They know each other so very well. If we had, they have their own little Facebook page. In the wee hours of the night, when a child comes into care unexpectedly, you can see the communication going. I've got an infant. I need diapers. And bam, it's happening like lickety split. And then even in the adoption community, and I love to sit in on our adoption support group meetings to talk about the trials and tribulations and the celebrations of the milestones children who would not have had. We talked earlier about the impact of trauma on the developing child. And our families are so keenly aware of what their role is. And that role is like a salvation of a tomorrow for a child.
And everything comes down to education and opportunities, right? Because like you said before, a lot of the families lose their children because of domestic violence and drugs and sadly addiction. So many people, I mean, by the even if you make $18 to $20 an hour, by the time you pay rent, car payment, car insurance, health insurance, put gas in your car, and then you throw in a daycare bill. I mean, we've got to, all of us collectively, have to look at these things, because people could become homeless from one paycheck. When you miss one paycheck and you can't pay your child's daycare or something, you need help.
Yes, I agree.
And I think we see that a lot, right?
Yes. What a fantastic edition of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends with our first segment here with Brevard Family Partnership. We have all of this shared on our website as well as our social media channels. We're going to be right back with HFH.
Did you want to say something?
Yeah, I just wanted. You wanted.
Yeah. Go ahead.
No. There's a lot of things we can talk about till Sunday, right?
Is there something that you want?
A couple of critical things.
Please say it.
When people think about the financial opportunities that is afforded to them when either fostering or adopting, think about this: child care costs are covered within the system. Child care costs are there for them. Educational cost to a child in foster care is till age 23. I mean, actually, until they can go and get a graduate degree, right? And so if you think about those kinds of things, and medical coverage is covered under the Medicaid program, state plan. So there really are no financial hardships. In fact, there are opportunities for children and families to support them.
So you're saying all you need is the love and a licensed home and somebody to care.
We'll take care of the details.
We'll
take care of you. Bring the love. We'll take care of the details.
That's right. And that's one of the greatest things about the state of Florida. We do try to help.
Thank you, Steve. I appreciate it.
Well, Ellen, I think that's your now's where you segue into whichever you have to say.
It is
an unscripted program, Ellen.
It truly is. It truly is. We're going to listen to a few of our sponsors. We'll be right back with Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right after these messages.
Cloud9 Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. The delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County and Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473, Visit them on the web at cloud9furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture.
Welcome to MedFast Urgent Care. We are Brevard County's largest urgent care network. MedFast is now open at 7:30 a.m. every day. That's right, 7:30 a.m. every day. We will get you in and out so you can get back to your day. When you are sick or injured, MedFast is here for you 7 days a week. Think fast, think MedFast. With 18 locations, there's a MedFast near you. Call 321-MEDFAST.
Are you longing for a taste of Louisiana? Lizette's Cajun Bistro is the place to be. They offer Cajun and Creole staples as well as American, vegan, and vegetarian options. The restaurant is located at 2447 North Wickham Road, Unit 146. All menu items are prepared daily from scratch and made to order. Dine in or take out as well as outside seating. Live music on selected weekends. So the next time you have a taste for Louisiana, stop by Lizette's Cajun Bistro, 2447 North Wickham Road.
Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great-tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000, 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at DixieCrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial
Group. There's something special about the place we call home. It's the place we live our lives, spend time with family and friends, and make our own. At St. Francis Reflections Hospice, we consider it a privilege to care for you wherever your home may be. We put our hands, hearts, and skills into providing high-quality hospice care in your home. To learn more about how we reflect life, love, and compassion, visit www.reflectionslsc.org.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in Cocoa, Florida. We are heard on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, FM 99.9, 100.7, and worldwide. Miss Ellen, are we?
Yes. We are, yeah, absolutely. All over the worldwide. We still are, as far as I know. The internet's still connected. 1510wwbc.com. You can get all of our listen live. You can certainly listen live from any one of your streaming devices, or you can get our archive shows there by date. Of course, we share it all on all of our social media channels as well as the website, which you can look up by topic, name, and by date. So it's a easy way to find all of our scheduled interviews that we've had for the last 14 years.
That's right. Thank you.
It's incredible.
Thank you so much for all that you do behind the scenes. And Ali, thank you for being here with us every Monday and being the Ellen's friend that shows up to help on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends and now become my friend too.
Yes.
So our second segment is with my good friend, Dr. Marian Moore and Mr. Rob Cramp. And Rob is the executive director of, it's not Housing for Homeless anymore. You've changed your name to Housing for Supportive. You're going to have to fill that in for us, my friend. So I'm going to go right to Miriam, and then we'll go to Mr. Rob. So talk to us a little bit about the new name and why the change.
We changed our name from Housing for Homeless to HFH Supportive Housing because it's more in line with our mission and who we serve. And we used to serve pretty much everybody coming out of homelessness, and now we serve our persons experiencing homelessness as well as our low income population.
So that's where the supportive comes
from. Yeah, so we provide supportive services with our housing.
Right. So you've been with them for, you've been doing, gosh, counting the people in the woods, helping people to get housing for so long. Tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and how you got involved with the housing situation.
Well, I think
it's, homeless situation too.
It's just been a passion of mine for a long time. I have a background in law enforcement and education, so I saw it a lot. But a lot of people don't know. But when I was a teenager, I was pregnant and homeless. So it was a situation that I can understand. That once you get into it, is very difficult to get out. If you're not connected to the right services, the right agencies, you don't know the right people. So it's just something that I felt that because of my experience, it's really where I needed to be.
You have to know who to call. Mm-hmm. And now it is whose website. And so Ellen, I didn't know if you know, but Miriam is now the director of operations with Housing for Supportive Homeless. And now we go to Mr. Rob Cramp. Rob, it was wonderful seeing you on Saturday. And talk to us a little bit about your role as executive director at Brevard Housing for Supportive.
I think it's one thing, by the way, let's go back for a minute to talk about how close the social services agencies are in this county. In fact, it was lovely having Phil here because for 3 years I was on the board of Brevard Family Partnership and worked with Phil. We did some great work there. I got involved about 10 years ago. And I think I describe my role, see, right now as managing the change, because Miriam referred to families that were not necessarily homeless. And what we've realized is that in Brevard, that we count the homeless every year, and this year we were just over 1,000 people we counted as homeless. There are many, many more people in this county who are at risk of. They're living paycheck to paycheck, one health care bill, one of the family losing their job, and they are also homeless. So we felt that we could not keep our what we felt was important in this county by limiting ourselves to just supporting the homeless. And that's why we changed the name, and in the process of changing the name, we're keeping our corporate name of Housing for Homeless, but we'd taken a DBA as HFH Supportive Housing.
So the only two words you added in there was supportive housing.
Yes.
Because, like you said, there are veterans who are homeless. There are people living paycheck to paycheck who are going to be homeless, right. And you could anticipate that happening. I think that's a good move.
Well, supportive is a very important part of it, because what we're finding is increasingly, and this is a national issue, this isn't just here, there is a lot of public funding available for providing housing for the homeless. There is much, much less funding to help support those people once they're in the housing. What do you do now?
Yeah.
Because a lot of the reasons they were homeless is they had issues like substance abuse, mental health issues. In fact, over 65% of the national homeless population has either a substance abuse or a mental health issue or both. And there wasn't funding. And we've realized that we have to. So we provide not only housing, we provide case management, we provide health support wherever necessary as part of our housing. We don't just stick people in housing.
Right, yeah.
We provide the support for them.
Yeah, and I think that's a good insight too, because I went to the groundbreaking ceremony for Orchid Lake, and I'm super excited about that. So, Miriam, can you just tell our listeners a little bit about Orchid Lake and what's in store for you guys?
This is exciting.
Yes.
Orchid Lake is exciting. It's a 90-unit apartment complex, and it has 1, 2, and 3-bedroom units. And we're hoping to have our first person leased up in April of 2024. We are actually moving our entire office to this location. We will have all of our supportive services and people there, right there on spot to assist residents. 50% of those residents or those units, so 45 units, are set aside for families coming out of homelessness or previously had experienced homelessness. And the other 50% are set aside for our low-income families and individuals. So we're going to have a really nice community.
Yeah, it's a great development,
mm-hmm,
right?
Yeah.
And now have I know we broke ground on it, but is the building actually going up yet?
Yeah.
Any bricks and mortar and cement and iron and all that good stuff?
Yeah. There's five buildings. So we have the clubhouse and four apartment buildings. And I think this week they should have finished the third floor on the fourth apartment building. So they really are coming along nicely. And there's going to be a children's play yard in there. We're hoping to have a splash pad there.
You, I think it's all about treating people with respect and dignity.
Mm-hmm.
Once they move in there, it doesn't feel like low-income housing. It feels like a home.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what I like about it. Yeah, yeah, there's no, you guys are not distinguishing between people who's poor and who's rich and who whatever. People are going to move in there and they're going to have a splash pad and they're going to have beautiful gardens and they're going to have an office that they can come down to and talk to people if they need to. So, Mr. Crump, tell me something about the properties that you guys own.
Yeah,
there's so many properties that housing for homeless, supportive housing.
We already have a long history of managing properties for homeless. We've been around 34 years. We already have 90 properties across Brevard. And it was those 90 properties and the skills we were bringing to managing those that encouraged or motivated a large developer to approach us to form the partnership that's building Orchid Lake. But we're not just satisfied with Orchid Lake. We're also developing a very similar property in Volusia County in Holly Hill. And that will be open in a couple of years' time. We have 6 acres of our own land in Cocoa that we are putting up. Another 60 properties will be available there in another couple of years. And we're making bids right now on 2 more pieces of land in Brevard that will eventually produce housing. And the reason we're making this such a large drive, if you like, is the desperate need for affordable housing. Or families, all the families and individuals up to around, say, 50,000 a year, the number of vacancies, the difference between what we need and what's actually available is around 13,000. That's what we need.
I'm going to let Allie jump in here. You just gave her a sigh.
Oh, that was a big, heavy sigh. I was surprised at that big of a number. Yeah. And you know, I think many of us can look at our earlier years and some of the decisions we made or didn't make properly that put us in at risk. So I'm glad you guys are there.
Yeah.
Looking forward to it.
So, Mr. Cramp, how does one get an application to get an apartment at Orchid Lake? And where are you getting the referrals from for people to live there?
Right. If you are homeless, the Brevard Homeless Coalition, which is the organization that administers the business of housing the homeless in Brevard, they have what we call a coordinated assessment system, where people, if they're homeless and they're looking for Orchid Lake or anywhere else, they can call 211.
Okay.
And 211 will put their names into a database, and then we have in Brevard Homeless Coalition, they match up the people who need new homes with what's available. And then every couple of weeks, we get together with the Homeless Coalition and work out who can house them. For those who are not, like Orchid Lake, there's only half of those are going to be homeless. For those who are not homeless, we have a banner draped over our fence. By the way, Orchid Lake, in case anybody wants to, this is the future of how we deal with homeless and low-income people, really, Orchid Lake. If you want to go and have a look at it, it's just east of the corner of Michigan and Clear Lake in Cocoa. And we have across the banner, we have a phone number there. Let me just give you a quick phone number, 321-655-6250. So if you're looking for something that is really affordable, you're not homeless, but you're always worried about the next paycheck, the next rent payment, that is the number, 321-655-6250.
Right. And so all of us who read the newspapers and watch the news, we all watch the rising prices for rent and mortgages. And we all say to ourselves, wow, for a two-bedroom apartment, it's $1,800 to $2,500. And I see you're shaking your head. And oftentimes, the rising cost of rent can force a family out of their home, whether they're renting or they own a home. So this Orchid Lake is something that people should know about just in case they're on the cusp of their rent going up and they can't afford it. So, I mean, you're seeing that in throughout Brevard County, Florida, aren't we?
Yeah, absolutely. And we are controlling that by putting limitations on what the rent should be. So for the homeless people, for the homeless population that will be in our properties, none of those families or individuals will pay more than 30% of their income. And for the rest of the families, will be very similar, because the prices we're talking about, we're going to be renting three bedroom for $1,150, two bedroom for just over $1,000.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Because, you know, we have so many people that come on our program and talk about socioeconomic things that are happening to themselves or their families. And honestly, Mr. Cramp, by the time people pay their rent, put gas in the car, pay health insurance, God forbid a child is sick, and some people don't even have the extra money to buy over-the-counter drugs like Robitussin or Mucinex or something. And I hear stories of this all the time. I met a lady recently who could not put tires on her car, because by the time you pay all the essential bills, you don't have that $300-$400 lying around. And that's because she's paying almost $1,800 a month for her rent in somewhere in Melbourne. So when people hear about this, yeah, some people might have to drive a little distance, but that's okay, because you make it up. In $1,150 is pretty good for a three-bedroom.
And going back to the your surprise at the 13,000 units, if we had those 13,000 homes, nobody in this county would have to pay more than 30% of their income for rent.
Yeah.
So what it means, is, in effect, if you think about it, it means that all those people out there who cannot, don't have that available, are paying 40, 50, 60, 70% of their income in housing costs. And it's just unsustainable. Yeah.
What is the recent point in time count that you all had for this year? Did we already count for this year?
Yeah, we count in January. We do it the last, usually do it the last week of January every year, the same way. And this year it went up 15%, just over 1,050.
So, Miriam, Dr. Moore, talk to your listeners a little bit about, people don't understand who the homeless or the soon-to-be homeless people are. And it could be people that are living right next door to you. It can happen from addiction, loss of a job, loss of a spouse. Gosh, we're watching mortgage rates going up and interest rates going up, right?
Right.
A loss of a job, most important, a lot of people become homeless after that as well.
Well, and the other part is, too, is, and you and I have talked about this as well, they're really, you know, financial literacy is a big deal. And people don't realize that, okay, if you're making $1,000 a month, you need to figure out a budget. And there are a lot of families that grew up not knowing.
You can't live on $1,000 a month.
I'm just saying, whatever the number is, right? Whatever, even if you're making $10,000 a month, doesn't mean you're not going to spend $9,999 of it.
Or buy Starbucks coffee.
If you don't know what you're doing.
No, exactly. No pun intended. So go ahead. Tell us, what do you see when you talk to people about why they become homeless, or how they have family members who are homeless?
There are as many reasons why people experience homelessness as there are the people. Because every situation is very unique. Every family is unique. We see families with 10 children. We see individuals. We see veterans. We see, we've been seeing an increase in senior homelessness. And I would say the primary reason is just the cost of housing. And it's the only solution is to build housing where people can afford it, to avoid them from, you know, becoming homeless. But we do see a lot of children. And you know, and the numbers that we count are the HUD numbers. And there's a difference in how we keep track of the numbers as opposed to, like, how the schools keep numbers. But, you know, we have hundreds, if not 1,000 or more, children in Brevard County that are experiencing some degree of homelessness. They're not in a safe situation. They may be living in a car, they may be living in a hotel, they may be living with friends or family, couch surfing. All these are situations of homelessness, but they're not always counted in the numbers that we see. So there are a lot of ways that a person can experience this housing insecurity.
Yeah, and I like that you will have case managers to work with the families and help them. And so at Orchid Lake, there would be an office right downstairs for people to come in and speak to someone.
Absolutely.
But no, Ellen, you're right about the financial literacy part, because we all give people tools to help them in life. But this is where we've always talked about education in our high schools, classes to help the graduating class. But when you should start a family, if you should have a family, do you have the resources to have a family?
And I'm not judging or anything, but when I see somebody pull through Chick-fil-A and they still have a donut on their tire because they can't afford to go get new tires, it's like you start wondering the judgment of people just in general, right? Of, okay, well, maybe you could have spent that same amount of money doing something else. But again, it's somebody that comes from a family of financial literacy, of understanding those things. I have probably the resources to eat out. I don't. You know, I don't do certain things. I make a budget. But not everybody knows those things. And unfortunately, I have friends that I say the same things to, and I'm and kind of trying to educate them, but it's not their, it's not what they came
well,
from.
Well, again, it comes
so it comes back from an education right. standpoint, support, love, understanding that not everybody had the
well,
you know,
it's
I remember a, Napoleon I, it, Hill, right? Think and Grow Rich.
Well, I think it's lovely that we have a community here with Mr. Cramp and Miriam and to give supportive services for the homeless. So give us the phone number and the address, the website one more time, because people don't wake up in the morning and say, today I'm going to be homeless. Things happen. Crap happens. People don't wake up today and say, I'm going to be an unwed mother and I need assistance from the government. People don't wake up and say, I need public school for my children. We are a family, we are a village, and we're supposed to take care of each other. And you know what? If we can teach somebody, you make a mistake, the next time we'll help you, we should, right? So give us the phone number
well,
and the website.
If you're homeless, then it's 211, and people are very familiar with homeless. If you want to learn more about HFH Supportive Housing, you can go on our website, www.hfsh.
Any events coming up that our listeners should know about to support? I know that you do partner up with people in the community. You do accept of we need volunteers, especially to count. And you also have an event coming up. Do you have anything?
Do we?
Well, we have the opening, and we have the ribbon cutting.
Yeah, we still have to set the date, but we will be doing a ribbon cutting at Orchid Lake.
When is it supposed to open?
We're hoping to have our certificate of occupancy for residents in April. We're hoping to move into the clubhouse and have our certificate of occupancy there by mid to late January for Orchid Lake.
Now, are they building all the buildings at the same time or one at a time?
They're doing them all at the same time, but the permits were done separately. So when the first one's complete, we can lease it up, second one. They'll all be within a couple of weeks.
I am super excited about Orchid Lake because I do know too many people that 50% of their income is going on rent. And they're really struggling with the other 50% to actually live. We all talk about having a life with purpose and putting value on our lives and our kids. Well, guess what? We can only do it if people can live.
That's right. And get involved. And if you've got, just like you always say, if you got a little change, you got a little friends, some resources you can do, make sure you find these community partnership programs that can help segments of individuals through all of us. Again, another fantastic edition of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Thank you, Dr. Miriam.